What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? You chuck it on that one, you chuck it on this one. You chuck it on your mother and you chuck it on your father. You chuck it on your brother and you chuck it on your sister. You chuck it on this one and you chuck it on me. Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do?
He only taught me to do better. I never know right or wrong.
All right, bad boys, what you gonna do when Randy Kelton and Deborah Stevens are coming for you?
What?
This is the Rule of Law on ruleoflawradio.com. We have our very own radio network now. How about that, Randy?
I'm impressed with me. Actually, I'm impressed with you because I had nothing to do with it.
We're back on the air, folks. ruleoflawradio.com. And the bad boys in government are running from us. What you going to do? What are they going to do when we're coming for them? Indeed. So, listeners, if you'd like to call in, it's the same phone number as for WTPRN, the former WTPRN, 512-646-1984. All right, so tell your friends, call in 512-646-1984. We also have a listener line, 512-485-9010, if you'd just like to listen. Mark Adams should be joining us momentarily.
Who?
Who? That attorney guy. That attorney guy, yes.
That's Mark Chump Adams.
So, yes, and I have some ranting to do. Couldn't wait one day. Here it is, Obama's chief of staff that he has appointed, Rahm Emanuel. So, you know, didn't even give us one day. We get to tell all the Obama supporters, we told you so. This guy's the son of his rarest, and to pull a lot of very interesting things during the Clinton administration. Apparently, he was somewhat violent in stabbing a fish at a dinner, yelling about his enemies, so to speak. This was firsthand witnessed. And he also promoted the foundation of American Public Service Academy, modeled on military academies, a youth corps whose students would be trained in civilian internship in the armed forces. Okay, so you can do some research on this guy, Rahm Emanuel, and you'll come up with a lot of scary things. So he's showing his true colors already, and you just would not believe the excuses I've been hearing on the radio today about him appointing this guy. Oh, well, you know, he's got some favors he's got to repay and all this and that. I'm telling you, man, I was about to beat up the dashboard today in the car listening to some of these excuses that have been flying about Obama supporting this guy, about naming him as his chief of staff.
Well, we are, after all, rational human beings. And we will use our rational minds to do what they do best.
Make excuses?
Rationalize.
Yeah, and here's something else. This is a YouTube video on, I think it was from MSNBC. I'm going to play you the first minute or so of this clip. Apparently, the Obama supporters at the White House were waving a communist flag, a red flag with a hammer and sickle. Listen to this, folks. You're going to love this.
Well, we showed you some video earlier that, do we have that ready, guys? That got a lot of emails and got our attention. Okay, so here they are, and they were celebrating like Boston News had been announced last week. Seems like a nice moment for them. They seem rather happy. They argue rather intoxicated, although that's not clear. That's the angle, right? Especially the year off. Plenty of little Obamas and little Palins along. Okay. The Obama theme. And wait for it. It's coming. Hold. Oh. There it is. Notice anything of that? What is the miracle today? These people sending a message?
That was me.
Okay, so there you have, waving the flag at celebration for Obama's victory. So even mainstream media is saying, what the heck is that going, is that happening? Why the, where the, what the heck? Why is the hammer and sickle doing there?
I have a hammer and sickle story.
Oh, go ahead.
In 1969, I was stationed Homestead, I'm sorry, 1968, I was stationed at Homestead Air Base, Florida. I was working on the flight line and going to work one morning and walking down the flight line, and this was a base that was a point of entry. So we used to get a lot of foreign aircraft in. And they would all park in a section away from the fighters that I worked on. And they had this one aircraft looked like a F-86 parked out all by itself. And with cordons around it, and I looked at it. I didn't recognize the markings on it. And as I passed, the radar con sticking up in the console looked like it had a bright red light turned on, just a tiny one, about as big as the end of my finger. And that's normally they don't have anything turned on these jets sitting out here because they want to keep the batteries up. So I went out and pushed a button, dropped the ladder down, climbed up to the con and looked at it, and it wasn't a red light. It was a bright red fluorescent sickle and hammer.
Oh, boy.
And I started to climb. I turned in, to climb down. I looked down, and there's the aircraft crew chief standing there. I said, "Sarge, that's a sickle and hammer." He said, "Yes, matter of fact, it is." "What the heck's that doing here?" He said, "Well, the sickle and hammer is not the question. The real question is, what's this MiG-17 doing here?" It seems that this major in the Cuban Army found out that Nixon, in order to cut costs, removed the AWACS we used to fly to monitor the Florida Straits. And since we didn't have the above, radar from above looking down, the ground-based radar had certain limitations. So this major brings out a block of Cubans, teaching them how to do bombing runs. And the normal strategy for a bombing run is you want to come in high over your target, kick in full wing air spoilers, shove the stick down, and get as fast going as fast as you can straight down. Because you're flying into their weapons, you want to be going as fast as possible. The idea in these jets is not to get hit. Getting hit is bad, always bad, bad, bad. It's not like World War II where you can get shot all to pieces and fly home. These jets, you get shot all to pieces, you don't go anywhere. So anyway, they all come in, climb in over target, dive in, pickle their bombs away, climb back up. And then he's going to show them how it's done. He climbs over target 30,000 feet, sticks his nose straight down with all this weight and all these bombs on, full throttle straight down, pickles everything away, and instead of climbing back up to where everybody else was, he lines it out about 50 feet off the water and said, "Adios, amigos." He decided to defect to the United States in a MiG-17. He comes screaming across Key West Air Naval Station about 50 miles to the west of them. They never had a clue he was there. He had 30 millimeter cannons aboard. He had a 50 millimeter cannon aboard. He had bomb rails, missile rails. He had pickled all of those off, but he could have still had them. He came straight up US-1 that runs down the Keys. Followed US-1 up the Keys, and a fellow that I worked with was in a bar in Homestead, Florida. And he stepped out of the bar and was standing smoking a cigarette and looked up, and whoosh, his jet went over, and he told a friend of his, "Hey, man, that was a MiG-17. The other guy said, "No, that was an F-86. He said, "No, man, I was in Korea. That was a MiG-17. He went in and called Homestead Air Base and told them, "Hey, guys, I'm down here at this bar down here in Homestead, Florida, and I stepped out the door, and a MiG-17 went over about 50 feet off the deck." They said, "Sarge, go back and have yourself another beer." So he did. The MiG tried to reach Homestead Air Base, and they didn't, for whatever reason, they didn't answer. He got New Tamiami Airport, which is a small general aviation airport west of Homestead Air Base, and told him who he was, and we asked for a DF steer, direction finding steer, into the airport. And they said, "Not in this lifetime." And they gave him a direction finding steer to Homestead Air Base. Homestead Air Base didn't know he was there until he lines up on runway, calls in a mayday, calls in mayday, mayday, low on fuel, request emergency clearance to land. The tower looks out and sees this F-86 and grants him permission to land. Guy in the SAC section, we had a SAC base. It was a SAC base because we're on the coast. We've got four B-52s sitting armed and ready at all times, and we had four F-4 Phantoms that set, these were set up for air interceptors in case someone enters the perimeter. And we have that happen all the time in Miami. If an airliner is doing circling Miami International and he drifts out a little too far, if he gets out over 12 miles, he enters the air defense identification zone. And if he hasn't already requested permission to enter it and hasn't filed a flight plan, he gets escorted home by two F-4 Phantoms. But they generally just run out there and hook up the units and crank them. But this time that didn't happen. We were standing on the end of the runway and got treated to one of the most incredible experiences I had ever seen. These two, four Phantoms are sitting out there, and these four pilots, one of the guys from the SAC squadron saw the MiG-17, recognized what it was, and hit the panic button. Four pilots ran out and hit the ladders all by themselves. Nobody else is around. Generally, they have support crew and equipment all over the place, a big starting unit. This time, just four guys ran out, hit the ladder, climbed up, dropped in. Actually, eight guys. There's two guys in each aircraft. Dropped in, the canopies dropped down, and these four incredible explosions. Just boom, 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 and all four aircraft disappeared in smoke. And we're working on the runway, looked up and saw this and said, holy crap. And then inside the smoke, you hear this, wow, 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 kaboom, these jets all leap into life. The smoke turns around, sucks down the intake, they take off. The MiG-17 would have killed them all. They were sitting on the end of the runway waiting for this guy when he landed. A MiG-17, an aircraft that was decommissioned shortly after Korea. They used a few of them in Vietnam, but they were just junk for recon and just to train pilots with. Entered our air defenses, could have completely taken out one of our most strategic bases. It wasn't a good day for the military. Anyways, long story. It gets better from there, but that's the gist of it.
Randy with the stories. Okay, well, we did have Mark Adams up on the collar bridge, but he's not there now. So, Randy, let's just go ahead and continue with our topic for the evening. Callers, if you'd like to call in, 512-646-1984. And in the meantime, Randy, you wanted to discuss posture in the criminal justice system.
Yes. The most powerful thing we can bring to the table is posture. If we're going to have a lasting effect on the criminal justice system as pro se litigants, we have to figure out who we are before we go in. People oftentimes wonder at what I do and how I manage to go in and give these people such a hard time. And not have a problem from it. It's posture. I always remember who I am. When I walk in the door, I know what my intent is, what my purpose is when I walk in the door. Sometimes it's different than others. Yesterday.
Yes, because I wouldn't let you go to Waco on Tuesday because we had to do the show.
This thing, I sleep and I wake up in a new world every day. I went to Waco and there's a woman there that a mortgage company conned her into paying a mortgage she didn't know. She gave her house to her aunt because she was living in Dallas. Just deeded it to her. The aunt got a loan against the house, and then the aunt died. The woman got the house back in probate. Well, in order to maintain their lien against the house, the mortgage company had to notify the probate court, but they didn't. So the probate court, by not waiting, by not notifying the probate court, they waived their lien. The probate court awarded the house to this woman with no encumbrances. And then the mortgage company come back and foreclosed on the house, except they didn't notify the woman. So she can't object to it. She can't show that she owns it, because she don't know what's happening. They get a foreclosure by default. Then they sell it to these two attorneys on the courthouse steps. This woman knows nothing about it.
Figures.
Well, now they're trying to, the first she finds out, before you can evict somebody, you got to notify them like 30 days ahead, and before you could actually get a order for eviction. The first she knows there's any problem, and she gets notified there's an order for her eviction. They just bypassed everything. So we're trying first to get, we filed a temporary restraining order, and the judge refused to sign it. So I had this woman go down to the grand jury, because the grand jury was meeting the next day, and just jump up and down and raise Cain with the grand jury. And she got in front of the foreman. And the complaint that she had was incomplete. So they informed the foreman that they would be back with criminal complaints against some public officials, and told the prosecutor objected and said, you should file that with the police department. And they told him, nah, we've done that before, and they throw it in the trash. So they did a lot of song and dance. So my turn to call me in. I come down. I want to look at all the records. But I also want to give the court reason to be careful with this woman. So I kind of come in as a ringer. I asked to see her records first. And once I had her files copied, then I went after them criminally, on their criminal records. And had a great time. I jerked around the court clerk. She came out and talked to me for about 10 minutes and then asked me to step into her office. The reason she did that is because I just crammed statute right down her throat, and she was looking foolish in front of her employees and didn't like it. But the main thing was, is that I treated her like an errant stepchild. I treated her dismissively, as if she had no idea what she was doing, and it embarrassed her. She was extremely careful with me. Actually, in Waco, McLennan County, everyone was extremely careful. And the reason they were extremely careful is because they had no idea who or what I was. When the court clerk, who is a district clerk, high-level elected official, came out and told me something was in a certain way, I instructed her that she was misinformed and she was to do what I directed her to do. And she had no idea how to deal with me. She had no idea what I was talking about. That's I was asking to see the minutes of the grand jury. And this is one of the great things you can use on clerks, because most of the counties don't keep the minutes of the grand jury the way they're supposed to. So when you ask for them, they get this blank look on their face. They don't know what you're talking about. And this one clearly did not. Turned out she had been an attorney for 30 years. And I asked her for a specific document that she's supposed to keep, and she doesn't know what I'm talking about. She was mortified. And when I got in her office, she did everything she could to show me how wrong I was. And then I stuck chapter and verse in her face, and she couldn't do anything with it. And she finally sent me to the district attorney for these records. Said that the prosecutor, that the district attorney keeps them.
Uh-oh.
Oh, that would really be a bad thing. If the district attorney has these records, then he has these records to the exclusion of the clerk of the court, which is you. And that would be a felony in Texas. And she kind of stammered, blah, 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 blah. You'll have to talk to the district attorney. So I went to the district attorney and asked them for the minutes of the grand jury. And the lady said, oh, sure. And she turned around, picked up a stack of little papers and handed them to me. And I looked at it, and it said, unofficial grand jury list. I told her, oh, my. This is an unofficial list.
Oh, my.
I need the official grand jury minutes. And she got this confused look on her face and started calling other people. And we stood out there quite a while waiting for them. And I wasn't watching them. I kept my back to them. But the guy I was with said they kept coming and looking at this little stack of papers. And it had a code of criminal procedure there. They were reading through. And then they'd come look out the window at me and talk to each other and read some more. They finally got the elected district attorney. He was in the grand presented to the grand jury, and they went and brought him up. And he came out and talked to me. Now, he's highest guy in the courthouse next to the district attorney, I mean, next to the district judge. And he is the learned counsel in the courthouse. He didn't know what I was talking about. Had no clue.
It's because they don't know the law, Randy.
Yeah, and but he was, I had to give him credit. This guy was good. I stood right on him and treated him like he was just ignorant. Just didn't know what he was doing.
Because he is.
And he was, and he knew it. And I acted like I was his grandfather. And treated him with that kind of acceptance. You know, I'm okay, I'll explain this to you. You know, you should already know this. It's like when your kids do something and you tell them, I've told you and I've told you and I told you. And still you do this. This is the attitude I treated him with. I asked him, he also gave him a information request under 17.30. And those of you who listen to the show a while understand what that is. One of the primary things they do wrong in due process in Texas is when you get arrested and brought before a magistrate is required by law to perform an examining trial. But they don't like that, so they do this little song and dance and call what they're doing a magistration. And when they finish with the magistration, the magistrate gives all the records back to the jailer who gave them to him, and the jailer gives them to the prosecutor. So the prosecutor can work the deal. Well, 17.30 instructs that magistrate to seal all documents had in the hearing, cause his name to be written across the seal of the envelope, and forward it to the clerk of the court of jurisdiction. And I explained this to a lot more briefly to the prosecutor. But the clerk of the court doesn't have them. And he said, well, Mr. Kelton, this request asks for court records. And we're the prosecuting attorney. We don't have court records. And our records are secret. Well, I understand that. But the records I'm seeking are missing. He said, they are? Oh, yes, they are. Somebody has done something with them. And I explained 1730 to him. That magistrate, he's supposed to send them to the clerk of the court, but the clerk doesn't have them. Oh, she doesn't? No, she certainly doesn't. Well, how do you know? Well, I just checked. Oh, you did? Yes, I did. And I was wondering if you have them. Oh, those are court records, and we would never have court records.
Oh, never.
That's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. The way I got to it, I missed a little part. I said, the clerk doesn't have them, and the magistrate gave them to somebody. Tell me, do you have those? Well, I told him and gave them to somebody, and whoever has them in violation of 3710 Penal Code, which is tampering with a government document, and that's a felony in Texas. Tell me, do you have those records? Oh, no, I would never have such records. Oh, my, well, can you tell me who does have those records? I wouldn't know that. I certainly wouldn't know a thing like that. Oh, you
oh,
wouldn't.
Never. Of course not.
I'm interrogating him, and he's playing innocent as the driven snow.
Mm-hmm.
But to their credit, they didn't cop this arrogant attitude. So I didn't call the security, to have security to arrest them. That's what got me thrown in jail in Williamson County. So I'm glad that didn't happen. But I didn't get an assistant district attorney or a deputy to the assistant to the district attorney. I got the district attorney. And he was extremely careful because he has no idea who I am. And he knows one thing, that I have a purpose.
That you're trouble.
Well, I have purpose. He can tell from what I'm doing, I have purpose. And we got back to the issue of minutes of the grand jury. And he's acting like he doesn't understand what I mean. And what the code requires is when the grand jury votes on a criminal accusation, when they're finished with the day's business, they are to go before the court and read to the court the accusation and notify the court whether they true bill or no bill. And the clerk shall make recordings in the minutes of the court. And I told him, I need to see those. And the reason this is a problem, because they said, well, nobody's ever asked for those before. I said, well, here's the problem. For me, it's a real problem because I'm going to be coming down here filing criminal charges against public officials. And if I give you a set of criminal charges, Article 2.03 Code of Criminal Procedure directs you and gives you no discretion in whether or not to give these to the grand jury. But how would I know if you actually did that? The way I can know is I check the minutes of the grand jury, and the minutes of the grand jury will reflect a true bill or no bill on the accusations that I make. If those accusations never appear in the minutes of the court, that gives me reasonable probable cause to believe that you never gave it to them. Then I'd get to come back and file against you. Oh, Mr. Kelton, you would do that? Oh, in a heartbeat. Yes, Mr. Kelton, I suppose you would. But his problem is, I have a purpose and he doesn't know what it is. I'm not telling him what it is, but I'm treating him like one of my children. Like he's not terribly important, I'm not too worried about him, I don't care what he does or doesn't do. Whatever he does is not going to matter to me because I'll just take the next step no matter what it is. And he knows that. And he's being extremely careful. It's about posture. A little later, I was at the Justice of the Peace and had about 10 security guards around me. And they really wanted to get ugly with me. The guys carrying the guns really like to get ugly. But they couldn't because I had went and called them. Actually, I walked out in the hall and walked up to a guy in uniform and said, are you security for this building? He said, yes, I am. Come with me. I need you. And I turned around and walked away. And as I was turning, he had this look on his face like, what should I do? And I just walked away from it. When I got back to the JP's office and stepped in the door, he was right behind me. He said, well, what can I do for you? See that clerk over there? Arrest her. And he gets this deer in the headlight looks. But I'm calm. I'm not upset at all. I'm talking in a normal voice. But I'm asking him to arrest the clerk. He has no idea what to do. He said, well, why would I arrest the clerk? Well, you'd arrest the clerk because she's a criminal, of course. And then I explained why she was a criminal, and he went and got to talk to his boss, and all of a sudden I had about 10 of them around me. All of them giving me expert legal advice, telling me what I should do and what I shouldn't do. But every one of them being extremely careful, because they knew that I had another purpose. And they're being set up. That's a long way of getting around to what I'm really talking about. The most important thing you can bring before the court is the fact that you're the sovereign. I know in the legal reform community, we give a lot of lip service to sovereign. Everybody says, oh, yeah, this is a republic and I'm sovereign. Well, yeah, we are. But in this regard, I'm not talking about my sovereign rights. I'm not sovereign in the rights that I have. Now, that's true, I am, but that's not what's happening here. In this case, I'm thinking of sovereignty the way we talk about King Solomon as being sovereign. When we talk about King Solomon, we tend not to talk about all of the rights and privileges he got being the king. We talk about all of the most difficult problems in the realm being dropped right squarely at his feet, and he could not turn away from them. I'm sovereign in that respect. I'm sovereign in the respect that I'm here doing my duty as a sovereign to ensure that all of my subjects obey my law. And I'm not here to be kind or considerate. I am the sovereign. They will obey my law, and that's all there is to it. If they don't obey my law, I don't go out and try to arrest them. I don't go out and try to instruct them and correct them. I delegate that to other people. District attorneys, district judges. I order district attorneys or district judges to arrest them.
Yeah, they're public servants.
Yeah, that I have people in place for that. I've delegated that authority, and then I go to that authority and demand that they do the duty that I've delegated to them. And when you do this, when you do it with dignity and with authority, it has a very profound effect. If you always keep in mind who you are, it keeps you from getting in an argument with them, the first thing. Because generally, the lower an official is on the professional scale, you've got the district judges and district attorneys, they will seldom argue with you. They'll tell you what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. And that's all there is to it. You're not important enough to argue with. I treat them like they're a step below me. Well, as you go down, you get the clerks, you know, they'll talk to you and argue with you and debate law with you a lot more than judges and prosecutors will. And you go on down, especially when you get down to the police and security guards and stuff, they really like to do confrontation. I don't know if it's that they like to or not, but it's what they know. If you're a policeman, 90% of your interactions with the public are confrontational in nature. So they spend all of their time in confrontation of one sort or another. Either they're initiating confrontation or they're brought into a confrontation that they're trying to mediate, but always they're dealing with confrontation. They're really good at it. As an ordinary citizen, a law-abiding citizen, how often do we get in confrontations with other people? Okay. It's seldom. You know, 96% of the public never get in trouble. 4% of the population do 90% of the crime. The criminals, they're pretty good at this because they're in confrontation with the police all the time, but you and I, we never have any interaction with them. So when we go down there, if we allow one of them to engage us in confrontation, we are way, way out of our league. We're dealing with a pro here. So remember who you are. The king,
we're the boss.
The king is not going to debate with a castle guard. He's not even going to tell the castle guard what to do. He's going to tell his head minister to handle this, and the head minister goes all the way down the chain until it gets to the bottom, and when it gets to the bottom, the one at the bottom who has to talk to the guard is pretty excited by then because everybody's on his case.
Mm-hmm.
This works much better.
Absolutely.
There was,
we're the boss.
Let me know, we have a call or two in.
Yeah, we have some callers.
So I'll cut this short, but in everything we do, keep in mind, we really are the sovereigns. And you don't have to know it all. If you act as though you're a sovereign, you decide what you're going to do before you go in there. What, you know, we have time to do our homework. And when I go in and ask a public official for a piece of information, or I ask them to do a certain thing, I've already checked the law that says they have to do it. So there's no need for me to argue with them. They either do it or they don't do it.
Or he calls 911.
Yeah, I go to the next step. I don't argue with them personally. I go get somebody else. Like, I go to the district attorney and ask him to go arrest him. Like, this justice of the peace clerk was doing this little song and dance. She didn't know what I was asking for. I said, I want to see the last 10 criminal cases filed in this court. Well, what's the cause number? I don't know what the cause number is. Look it up. Well, I have to have the cause number. No, ma'am, you do not. You go get me the last 10 cases filed in this court. Well, you'll have to give me the cause number. Wait right there. Walk out the hall, get security, come with me. Arrest her. And all of a sudden, I'm trying to get her arrested just because she wanted to show me how much authority she had. And she is flabbergasted. She has no idea what's going on. The guard, he has no idea what to do. And he tells me that he can't arrest her. Of course you can. It's your duty, and I expect you to do it, and I'll breach no interference. Well, I don't know if I can do that. I'm sure you have a supervisor. Yes, I do. Boom, he's gone. See, I'm arguing with the guard. I'm not talking to the clerk anymore. I'm arguing with the guard about whether or not to arrest her. And I can assure you, this clerk, that's an experience she will never forget. Okay, she's pointing at me.
Yeah, look.
I get carried away on the subject.
We can continue after we take the calls.
Okay, the reason I seem to be harping on this is that of all the things that we do, this is about the most important.
Yes, and we will continue with this situation, but I want to take a calls first because they've been hanging on the line for quite a while. Okay, we're going to go to Chris in Oklahoma, and we also have Mark Adams on the line in Russell. Chris, thanks for calling in.
Hey guys, congratulations being back on the air again.
Thanks, Chris.
Appreciate it. Real quick, get an update on the Jesse Trinidou case.
Oh, yes.
In the U.S. District Court in Salt Lake City. The FBI, in their infinite indignant wisdom, out of Salt Lake City, filed for an appeal to, delay further the ruling that was handed down by Judge Kimball, the U.S. District Court there. They are, again, trying to stall Jesse interviewing Terry Nichols and David Paul Hammer, who are the key witnesses in either material or direct in the case. I wanted to get your opinion on how, after it goes to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals and the U.S. District Court judge ruling in favor of Trinidou, why the FBI continues to appeal, and if they have any legal ground to do so. And I'll take your answer off here.
That's hard to say because I'm not familiar with the law on which they're standing. This gets into national security issues that they claim are issues of national security, and that's a special study. So I don't know what they would be making the claim on. I'm sure that the case in point is sealed.
Well, Chris, didn't Chris dropped off the line. I'll get Chris to give us some more information about this off air. Maybe we can discuss this on the show tomorrow night. But as far as my understanding, the court had already ruled that this person had to be allowed to give deposition.
Yeah, I'm trying to kind of organize the issues. I'm sure that the FBI is going to say this goes to national security, and if you allow this to happen and this gets out, it'll compromise national security.
Wah.
However, I suspect that the case is sealed already, so that all of the participants are forbidden to reveal anything.
Yep, so it's a moot point.
And any evidence developed in this discovery would be required to be taken before the judge in camera. That means he looks at them in his chambers himself, and he makes a decision as to whether or not they affect national security. And essentially what I got from the prior opinions of the court is the court was pretty annoyed because it seemed as though the feds were telling the judge, we don't trust you to keep our secrets.
No, really. And judge isn't going to take too kindly to that.
He probably did not. So, but not being intimately familiar with the law on which the FBI stands in making their appeal, it would be hard to...
Chris, if you're still listening out there, send us an email with some more details about this, and we'll be able to discuss it more at length tomorrow.
Yeah, it may be a little too complex to do quite this quickly. We need to kind of discuss it first so we can find out where we're at, and then we can give a good idea about what we think the courts will do. I think, and I think the original ruling the judge gave, it just struck me as an indication or a sign of the times. This judge was not in the FBI's pocket.
Mm-hmm, right.
And we tend to think of the judges as always being in the pocket of the feds.
Right. Well, this is a state judge.
Yeah. Well, this has to be a federal.
This is federal?
This has to be a federal judge. I mean, he's in the state, but he's a federal judge. And he's defying the federal government in a big, big way.
Well, it's about time.
Yeah, this was, Chris, when he brought this up, so this was a major ruling, and yes, it was.
Yeah, I read it. It was awesome.
So it appears as though it's a sign of the times. The sky's falling in all around us. The judges have taken the side of the federal government, and the federal government has incredibly messed up everything, and it appears as though the courts are finally deciding that this sink is shipping. This ship is sinking, and they want to get off of it.
Yeah.
So from our perspective, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because now we may actually have judges ruling somewhat more fairly.
And they have.
And around the country, we've been hearing more of people getting more fair rulings. There was a major ruling in credit and bankruptcy recently where the courts went after the mortgage companies to the tune of $1 million or so in sanctions, half a million or a
million. Good, it's about time.
So the tide appears to be changing somewhat.
Yes, okay, we're going to go back to the call board. We've got Mark Adams calling in. Hey, Mark, thanks for joining us tonight.
Mark who?
Thanks for joining us. So how did the exit polls go yesterday? Give us an update on the exit polls over there in Florida.
Oh, well, I'll be happy to do that, but I want to take a second to talk about the federal judge's ruling there and the FBI's appeal of it. First of all, the appeal is designed to just delay.
That's what I thought, too.
Right. And it would be a baseless appeal. And on top of that, the original intent of freedom of the press is that the government would have no secrets whatsoever from the public. Because, as Patrick Henry said, the liberties of a people are never secure when the government can operate in secret.
Yeah, I don't believe this. We have to keep such and such a secret because of national security.
Now, Patrick Henry also said, if they want to keep something secret from you, shoot their ass. Because they are scumbag criminals. Anyway, so the judge, actually, this is the beauty of the appointment for life. If you actually, appoint an honest judge to the federal bench, they have a tremendous amount of power to do good. Now, during the 90s, during the Clinton reign, about a third of the federal judges retired or resigned from the bench. And that was because there was actually an active movement to get rid of federal judges through threats of bodily harm. And they attacked a few, and they blew up one and killed him and his wife. And it was actually a move directed at the honest federal judges on the bench. And so a lot of them were purged in the 90s. And, of course, Clinton and Bushler never appointed anyone who wasn't a good scumbag criminal to the bench. So we have very few honest judges left on the federal bench. And you know, this happens to be one of them. He's trying to do the right thing. And, of course, anyone who has information that may be relevant to a case or may lead to the discovery of relevant information may be deposed in any action. That is the standard. And, you know, they try and hide behind national security, which once again flies in the face of the First Amendment freedom of the press. They try to hide behind, you know, security and interviewing people in prison, which once also flies in the face of the freedom of the press.
That was the nonsense argument the judge threw out.
Right. Yeah, the judge there did the right thing. He is definitely a good guy. And the FBI appealing it, they are busy trying to delay and avoid, obviously, the information that they fear may come forward. And, of course, there are ways, and I wouldn't be surprised if someone got beat up and killed in prison.
I was going to say, I was just fixing to say I'm concerned that somebody's going to get suicided here.
Yeah.
Well, aren't both of these individuals in solitary, aren't they in isolation from the general population?
Oh, well, they suicided themselves. First they beat themselves for a couple hours, and then they killed themselves.
Yeah, they caved their head in with multiple blunt objects.
Right. They banged their head against a baton about 20 times, and then they died. And you know, that's the thing. You know, we live in, you know, I heard you talking about the sovereign, and you're exactly right. That's what the founders intended, that the people would be sovereign, because the founders understood that the most evil organization throughout history was government. And the only way to combat that evil is to make the people, give people the power to control the government. And our power to control our government has been completely undermined and eliminated. And so we're in a situation now where we're virtually powerless. It's not over yet, but it's pretty damn close to being over.
Oh, it's not as close as you think, Mark. We are about to land on these guys like a ton of bricks.
Oh, yeah. Well, believe me. And they have done the dumbest shit, and we'll talk about the election stuff.
Language is a family show.
That's dumbest feces.
Right. Well, they have just pulled the stupidest move in fixing an election in a couple states ever. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But back to the thing that's going on here is these people are doing their damnedest to interfere with the truth coming out. And now, I would think a lot of them would be really worried because, you know, there's a new sheriff in town, and he takes power January 20th. And a lot of people have a lot of hope that Obama is going to straighten things up. And one of the things, yeah, right. And
one of the ways he can put on song and dance and seltzer down your pants is to get rid of a lot of these dirty, rotten, corrupt U.S. attorneys that Bush put in there, and put in his own dirty, rotten, corrupt U.S. attorneys.
Yeah.
But at least he switches it
around. The best way to reiterate that there's a new sheriff in town is throw a few of the old sheriffs in jail. Okay, and there's lots of dirt on the old sheriffs. In fact, once again, as you all know well, in case anyone's out there listening doesn't understand, but 18 U.S.C. 4 says if someone has evidence of a crime and they don't report it to the authorities for prosecution, then they've just committed a felony. 18 U.S.C. 3 says that if you engage in covering up a crime, then you're an accessory after the fact.
And that shouldn't be lost on anyone. You know, I talk about 18 U.S.C. 3332.
Yeah, that's another
way. That's way, way down there. This is 18 U.S. Code 3, and 18 U.S. Code 1 has been repealed. So it's right up there at the front, guys.
Right in there at the front. And, you know, we all know these, the people that are in the, you know, the kleptocracy that runs our country now aren't very good at reading. But it's right there up at the front. And people like you and me and others, you know, point it out to them. I spelled it out to them recently here in Florida, that some of the stuff they're doing and trying to cover up judicial corruption and election fraud happens to be a few crimes. And, you know, 18 U.S.C. 3, 4, 3, 3, 2.
All right, well, Mark, hang on there. We're going to keep you up on the line. I want to hear more about what happened last night or Tuesday night with the election. Let's move on to some other callers right here, and you can hang on the line for comments. We're going to go to Russell in Texas, and then we also have Alan. Hey, Russell, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Well, after going up to Waco with Randy yesterday, that was some more enlightening experience, and I got to say, Randy sure knows how to trick these people into confessing to things. But I wanted to let you, Deborah, know and let the world know that how Randy was. Now, first of all, Randy said, we're going to leave about 6 o'clock in the morning to go to Waco. I said, okay, fine. So I get there about 5:30 a.m.
This Randy's is propaganda.
Well, it might be propaganda, but I'm going to spread it. Now, he's still asleep. So I let myself in. I sit there at the table for a while. You know, I kind of make some noise, just trying to wake him up and stuff like that. And he doesn't get up. He's still occasionally snoring. Okay, so I go get my computer. And I thought, hell with it. I get on the Internet for a while. So about 5 minutes to 6, he gets up and stumbles in there to the bathroom. And I'm going, he said, why did you get me up? And I said, well, I just sit here playing on the Internet waiting for you to get up, so no big deal. I said, besides that, you were snoring and talking to yourself. And I said, what do you mean talking to you? He says, what do you mean talking to myself? I said, yeah, you said, Judge, please don't throw me in jail. And I'm going, you are having a nightmare, man.
Scurrilous lies.
That's funny.
So that's how the day started off, but it was a lie. But he had a good laugh about it when I told him.
Russell.
It went uphill from there.
Russell.
But the beautiful part about it is how he went into the district court and got the district clerk to basically acknowledge that the records that he was seeking was down in the prosecution's office.
Yep. Yeah, we did the same exact thing when we were in Williamson County.
And then when he goes and confronts the prosecutor, it's like, oh, we don't have those records. Oh, I assure you, Mr. Kelton, we don't have those records. You know, and Randy goes, well, you know that's felony in Texas. Oh, yeah, yes, I know that. You know, we don't have those records. And I'm going, boy, somebody just got caught with the pants down.
Yep, just like when we were in Williamson County and the prosecutor comes out with Randy's file. And I said, hey, look, Randy, isn't that the file that's supposed to be in the court records, but it's not? And the guy just stood there like he looked like a cat with a feather sticking out of his mouth. And I said, where did you get that file? Did you get that file from the magistrate? Oh, well, part of it. I got him to cop to a felony. I got the county prosecutor, Williamson County, to cop to a felony right there in his own office. And I'm just standing there looking at him like, busted.
Yesterday was similar in that we've got the prosecuting attorney. It's his job to prosecute, and he's always grilling other people. Now he's the one on the spit. And I'm the one doing the grilling.
And I'm basting.
She basted that county attorney good. He was this guy, that file, when she pointed at it, he looked like it was getting real hot, and he's looking for a place to throw it down.
Kryptonite or something. But
even this prosecutor, he's doing a little tap dance. Now, this guy was a lot smarter than the one in Williamson County. So he handled himself very well. But he was doing a little tap dance, trying not to step on one of the landmines that he knew full well I was sitting out in front of him. So I was real pleased with him. I like smart prosecutors, and he didn't do anything stupid. only one stupid thing happened.
Only one smart Alec thing.
And then, you know, Randy asked for some files to look check over, and so I got up there by the counter with him, and we were both looking through the files. And here you go. They start out with an indictment. And there's no criminal complaint to file. There's no nothing required by the law.
Yeah.
We need to start out with an indictment and go forward.
I went to the county court, and they had a verified criminal affidavit in all of the cases.
Damn, really?
Yeah, but they were all by the same guy. This guy, Jason something or other. And I asked the clerk, who is this Jason Chandler, I think it was? Is he an investigator for the prosecutor's office? He said, well, yes, he is. So what the attorney's doing, the prosecutor is preparing an information and having his investigator prepare. It wasn't a criminal accusation. It was a verified criminal affidavit. So he swore on his oath to hearsay.
Uh-oh.
Duh. This was incredibly dumb. So none of them, you know, this, Waco's, McLennan County's records were really a mess. So when we start going after, instituting our onslaught, we will roll over Waco like a steamroller.
I didn't hear you earlier, for the first half hour or so, but did you explain the fraud involved in that foreclosure that we looked at?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I didn't go into detail about how, well, just that they didn't notify this woman to have a hearing and take her house away from her. Now, this woman has, what does she have? The MS, multiple sclerosis.
Yeah, multiple sclerosis.
And her son, what did he have?
I don't remember. You know, he was 9 years old.
Yeah, he's seriously disabled.
Yeah.
The mortgage company has a hearing. They petition the court to take this woman's house from her, and there's no evidence in the court record other than a certificate of service to show that she's been served. Well, this was an original petition, and in the record it shows it was served by mail, but there's no certified mail number, neither is there a return from the certified mail.
Sounds bogus to me.
Okay, let's clarify this a little further. The year prior to that, the woman won the home free and clear by probate court. Okay? And there is a signed judge's order from the probate court giving her the home and furnishings.
Yeah, and here's the issue I'm going to bring. The first thing the trial judge had to determine was whether or not the trial judge had jurisdiction. And the way the trial judge gets subject matter jurisdiction is with a petition being brought to him in compliance with standing law. So the fact that a certificate of service was in there was not enough if there wasn't including a return from a process server, as this was an original petition. It had to be served by the constable. Can't serve it by mail. And even if it was served by mail, there would have to be a return from the certified mail filer.
That's right.
To prove that it actually hadn't been served on the purpose. They're moving ahead with this person not in the courtroom.
More
so the judge has to go to somewhat extraordinary measures to ensure that the person has actually been notified, and the judge didn't do that, so we're going criminally after the judge.
That's right.
But the corruption of the law firm coming out of Houston against her is they put the letter of testament from the probate court in, which happened 12 days before the probate court issued the order declaring her the lawful owner of the furnishings and home, because the mortgage company never filed a claim in the probate court.
Yeah, so they waived their claim. Now, what they gave the judge part of the information from the probate court to prove that this woman was the executor of the estate.
That's right.
They didn't give the court the rest of the information to show that this woman is no longer the executor of the estate, because it's closed. And that, if they had they put that document in there, it would show they had no standing.
That's right.
So if you look in causes of action, that's fraud by non-disclosure.
That's right.
Gotcha, Bubba.
All right, listen, we're going to break now. Mark, Russell, hold on the line. We've got Alan from California. We're going to take more of your calls when we get back on the other side. This is The Rule of Law on ruleoflawradio.com. We'll be right back.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with JurisDictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step-by-step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. JurisDictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit WTPRN.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Thank you.
right, we are back. The Rule of Law on Rule of Law Radio. Ruleoflawradio.com. We have resumed our normal schedule, Mondays and Thursdays from 8 to 10 Central Time, Fridays 8 to midnight for our info marathon. And if you would please help us with our show, please go to ruleoflawradio.com and donate whatever you can. We've had some donations come in over the last few days, and for that, I thank you, listeners, very much, because we really, really need it right now. I've had to take a lot of time off of work to set this up, and Randy's put some effort into it. I'm just kidding.
I delegated. Handle it.
He told me to handle it, so I've been handling it. So anyway, we're back on the air, and we need your help. Please give us whatever donations, however big or small you can. It really, really helps. Please support our sponsor, Jurisdictionary. And if you would like to be a sponsor, you too could be a sponsor of The Rule of Law. Please email me. If your product has value in use and marketable value, which means value in use means it's not a scam, okay? It's actually a real product that does what you claim it does, or is service that is what you claim it is. It has value in use and marketable value, which means people would actually want to buy it for whatever price you're asking for it, all right? And it's not morally offensive to a person of normal, reasonable prudence.
Let me give an example.
We're not going to sell porn for you, in other words.
Her lead singer in her band has a...
barbecue joint.
He has an exclusion. He can sell lots on the moon.
Oh my God, Pat. Don't study Pat. Pat will try to sell you real estate on the moon. That does not have marketable value or value in use. All right, so no, Pat cannot advertise his real estate moon scam on Rule of Law. All right, at any rate.
He sold.
Okay, we're going to go back to the call board now. We've got Mark Adams, Russell from Texas, Alan from California. We see you there, Alan. Just hang tight. We're going to you next. So, okay. So, guys, we were talking about this scam, as it were, up in Waco. They didn't file. They didn't give this person notice. There was no numbers for registered mail. Actually, when you send registered mail, you're supposed to have the registered mail number on the document, the same number that matches the registered mail number on the envelope to prove. Sure it wasn't there.
It's standard procedure for an attorney to put that number on the certificate of service if it is served by mail.
And
in this case, they're not allowed to serve it by mail. It has to be served by a process server.
Oh, boy, see. So they're just messing up all over the place.
It was clearly a scam. And when I spoke earlier about posture and knowing what your outcome is, in this case, I had one outcome. And that outcome was to stir up as much stink as I possibly could in McLennan County so they would think that they've got a ringer. That this woman has brought in somebody just to beat the crapola out of them. That I'm just trouble. That's all I am. So that they will see her as a threat to them, and try to fix this problem, get it to go away, and hope I'll go away with it.
Mm.
So that was my posture.
Good luck.
It's nice going in when your only purpose is to annoy them. That was
don't
a little...
annoy them too much. You'll end up in jail, dude.
One of the guys that came with us, oh, I could not believe it. He wanted to watch.
Oh, no.
What he didn't tell me was he had 8 traffic warrants. And that wasn't bad enough. But the people at the courthouse recognized him. They knew him personally.
Oh, boy.
And they left him alone for about 3 hours.
Oh, like they even gave him a chance to flee.
And then we're getting ready to almost get out of there, and then they come up, you need to place your hands behind your back. We've got 8 warrants for you.
I asked the sergeant, Sergeant, would you mind if I smacked him upside the head and knocked some sense into him? He said, you could try, but I don't think it would do any good.
Oh, boy.
So I don't worry. He's not listening to this program. we know where he's at.
Yeah. So, Russell, you have anything else for us tonight?
Well, this just needs to be kind of a refresher to the public out there to show exactly what kind of fraud and mismanagement and everything else that goes on, especially when it comes to these foreclosures. They didn't have a leg to stand on, and they are virtually stealing this woman's property.
Yeah, and how many times a day is this happening all over the country?
That's my point. That's my point. And people, usually just, they don't have the funds to fight, everything else, they give up, everything else. And luckily enough, she contacted the right party and got both of us involved, and we're doing what we can to help out and expose the fraud. Because now, I mean, if she was able to carry a lawsuit against, I mean, she'd have triple damages against this law firm, against the damn judge, everybody involved in this routine for the last 3 years.
Well, so, I hope she sues them.
We're going to try. Primarily, our purpose here is to keep her in the house, keep these scumbags from stealing it.
And I bet you, before it's over with, we're going to find out that these two attorneys up in Waco that bought this home at foreclosure as nothing but running a real bad foreclosure mill up there in Waco. It's a racket. Most of these tax sales and these foreclosure stuff are nothing but a racket. And people just voluntarily give up their stuff and don't even lift a finger most of the time.
Mm.
So if we can show fraud, and that's one of the things that I wanted to do while I was up there that I didn't get time to do, was look through the records and dig out all records referring that on which these attorneys' names were attached and the mortgage company. So, you know, these guys are going to worry that we're digging for dirt against them. So that, you know, my purpose was to keep this woman in her house. And in I'm at the court to see how much trouble I can cause everybody there and how much buzz I can get going back and forth. So I suspect that today there's been lots of phone calling going on.
It was either that or they're Googling Randall Kelton on Google. and they're finding out who Randall Kelton is. So
that may not make them happy. But anyway, that was
especially our when they find out that I'm involved, because I'm not going to put up with no crap. Hola.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll get off.
Thank you, Russell.
Thank you, Russell. Appreciate that. All right. We're going to go. Any comments, Mark, before we go to our next caller?
Oh, yeah. This foreclosure scam stuff goes on all the time, all over the country. And what you guys are talking about there is just completely outrageous. I mean, the judge knew good and well that there was no personal jurisdiction, because personal jurisdiction requires proper service, and obviously the record did not show proper service, and he's personally liable. But really, the attorneys, they've committed fraud. They've committed fraud on the court.
That's where we're going.
Yeah, and they should be prosecuted.
The judge should be prosecuted, too. He knew. He can't sit there and claim that he didn't know he was without subject matter jurisdiction and in personam jurisdiction. He had neither one. And he had to know it.
Well, he clearly had to know that he didn't have personal jurisdiction. Clearly. That's really elementary. So, I mean, subject matter jurisdiction is elementary, too, and it does get screwed up. I mean, I've seen it happen. It's happened in a case I was involved in. And so that does get screwed up, too. But personal jurisdiction gets screwed up more often because, these attorneys didn't even, this is a Texas case, but in general, unless it's a small claims case, you have to have personal service to process. And you have to have an affidavit showing personal service process in the court file before the judge can act. And the judges know that.
That's why I want to go after the judge first. All the time I was down there yesterday, I kept telling these guys, don't worry, I'm not after you. Okay, I may file a few crummy little complaints against you, but don't worry about them, I'm not after you. I'm after the judges. I want the district judges.
Well, I would think the judge would be awfully happy to burn those attorneys.
If he thinks he can take the attorneys and throw them under the wagon and get himself out, he's got another thought coming.
But get him to burn the attorneys first.
All right, we're going to move on to our next caller now, Alan from California. Alan, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Randy, Deborah, welcome back.
Thanks. You got a lot of background noise, Alan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll make it quick. I'm really glad you guys are back. I'm glad to see on the website. First thing I want to tell you guys are coming back. I hit that donate button now, and I encourage everybody to do that.
Oh, thank you. I did see your. I saw an Alan from California that had donated. I was wondering if that was you.
Yeah, that was me. And the best things in life are free, except liberty.
Liberty is never. Freedom that's is right. One thing that's never for free.
But you guys are the bomb. I mean, I went through some serious blues, but when I saw you guys coming up back up on election night, oh man, my life got so much better all of a sudden.
Oh, thank you. Well, my life got better all of a sudden too. So did Randy's.
Yeah, and all we're going to ask for is that you tithe no more than 50%.
Oh boy.
Well, no, we'll have to exclude your beer fund, Randy. Sorry.
Oh man. The problem is I don't even drink beer.
And tell all your friends too. And we're going to be sending out an email bomb over the weekend. We've gotten so many emails from people wondering where we are. Are we going back on the air? We've compiled the email list, and it's so many people that it's in the thousands of the emails, the individual email addresses that we've gotten. It's so many that we can't send out that many emails from our servers, and so we have to get another email server, and we're gonna be sending out an email bomb over the weekend to everybody, and tell your friends, and we'll be having a link set up on our page soon, also for people to sign up for email address for email list.
Yes, so we've got to keep you up to date.
Yes,
that sounds great. Hey, just two points of business. Are you guys going to continue your archives?
Yes, we're continuing the archives. I made another post on the website today. I'm archiving. I archived Tuesday night. I archived tonight. And the archives will be posted soon. I've got to do some editing because I played music for a long time before and after the shows. So I just have to edit that out so people don't have to wade through an hour of reggae classics to get to the show. But yeah, we'll be posting the archives, and actually it's going to be an even better archiving situation than before. We're going to be using a WordPress format where people will actually have a login, and you can log in and write your own descriptions and comments of the shows.
Yeah, and I'm going to set it up here so as we go through the show, I'll put comments in, and WordPress will keep track of the time that I put them in, mm-hmm. So you'll kind of know where we're at as we move along, and not like the last archives that didn't have any information. These will have good information about what everything's about, so you can better select the...
That sounds awesome, because you guys have the best guests. I'm learning so much from all the people and the callers that call in, and your information, of course. It's just everything together. It's just such a wonderful education. I was so bummed when you guys went down, but I'm so grateful you're back.
Yeah, we're coming back, and we're going to be trying to get back the other hosts, as many as possible, back up on the air as possible. But of course, these kinds of things take funding.
Absolutely.
So
hit that donate button, everybody out there. Go to Rural All Radio and hit that donate button as often and as much as you can.
And believe me, every little bit helps. I'm serious. Every little bit helps. I mean, we have gotten over 1,500, maybe even close to 2,000 emails, and I know just from what little I know about sales, for every one person that writes, there's another 10. And so I know that means we had to have had at least 15,000, 20,000 listeners. I mean, if every person that listened even sent us $5 or $10, you would not believe how much that would help us to
make
things.
And there's something else that will help us a lot. That we're promoting sponsors.
Right.
And the way we show value to the sponsors is by the streams. Now, we know a number of those streams go to micros around the country. Yeah, we can't count those.
Yeah, so even if you're listening on an FM station right now, when you can, get on your computer and stream from your computer anyway, because it'll mean that we can show numbers.
Yeah, we count the streams. And the thing I was going to ask is I'm going to start probably once a month or maybe once every other week, send out an email of what we've got coming up and the things that are going on. And if any of you have lists of people with similar interests, forward our emails to them. If we can pick up more streams, that's just as good as a donation, if not better, because then we can go to our sponsors and say we have more listeners, we can charge more for the sponsoring and get this network funded so it remains stable and we don't have the problems the last one did.
Yes. Okay, well, Alan, listen, I'm sorry we got to let you go because there's a lot of noise on your end.
Sorry about that. I'm on the road and I see a Obama bumper sticker here, so...
Okay. All right, and you know we do have a listener line, 512-485-9010, so you can listen while you're on the road.
That's the only way I can get to you until you get your archives back, so great. Thanks, guys.
Okay, and by the way, we'll also be setting up our website to play archives on continuous loop.
Awesome.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Alan.
Okay. Keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks. Yes, we're going to be, I'll be setting that up probably sometime over the weekend or this evening to play our archives on continuous loop. So you'll be able to hit the play button on Rule of Law Radio and hear something of us, unless I just happen to decide I feel like DJing some reggae music at the time. But hey, you know, we held on to half of our listeners last night for about 2 hours after the show, and I was just DJing my favorite tune. So hey, you know, we got something in common with the listeners here. They like my music. All right, we're going to go now to Mark in Wisconsin.
Hey, welcome back. It's great to see you guys back, or hear you back, rather.
Thanks, Mark. What's
Thank
on
you.
Your mind tonight?
I was just going to say welcome back and try and get a muzzle on that Mark Stevens over there. He's, you know, gets a little crazy with the profanity sometimes.
Oh, Mark Adams, you mean?
Yeah, is it Mark Adams?
Mark who?
Yeah. The attorney.
Yeah, figure, see?
Well, we're not going to hold that against him.
Yeah, always nothing but trouble.
Yep. Doesn't sound too good going out over the air, if you know what I mean. I was calling. I don't know if you got my email. I'm one. Ray Nagin just admitted to breaking the law with confiscating guns, and I was wondering what charges could be brought against him since the NRA is unwilling to do it.
Who?
The guy down in New Orleans who had the guns confiscated, the chief of police and
if he broke the law, that's official oppression.
Right, he's already admitted to it.
Then everybody who had a gun confiscated should file criminal charges against him.
Can anyone file a criminal charge against him?
Now that's Louisiana.
Louisiana is different from all the other states.
Oh, that figures.
Really?
We have common law states, the commonwealths, and then we have Spanish law states, as most of the other states.
That's us.
And then we have Louisiana.
Oh, really?
Which is based on the French law.
French, yeah.
So it's somewhat different. All of it has to follow Constitution. And if Louisiana doesn't have an official oppression statute, no problem. You can bring down the federal statute, 18 U.S. Code 242.
We need to look and see if anyone from any other state would be able to file. Like in Texas, if you're in another state, like you're in Wisconsin, you could still file if you know that a crime has been committed in Texas. You don't have to be in Texas or a Texas resident to file. And you don't need standing either. You don't have to be damaged by the crime either.
Yeah.
Okay, now, so what we need to do is look at Louisiana law. And someone had put together some links pages for me of all the criminal procedure codes and penal codes of all the other states. And you can get to that from Rule of Law at ruleoflawradio.com. Now I've been told that people who run Vista, the flyout menus on my website, may not work. And you know, number one, you shouldn't be using Internet Explorer anyway. Okay, if you get on Mozilla or some other reasonable browser, you'll be able to see it, but I'm going to be doing something for people who have Vista and use Internet Explorer to so that they'll be able to deal with the flyout menus. But at any rate, we do have links to all the criminal procedure codes of all the states there. So,
well, okay, here's my offer. If anybody can put that together in a criminal complaint that will fly, I'll fly down there and I'll file it.
You may not even need to. You may be able to mail it in.
Yeah, in common law states. In the Commonwealths, Pennsylvania and Massachusetts and most of the original colonies were common law states. There you have to have standing. You have to have been injured in order to be able to file a criminal complaint.
Okay.
The Spanish law states take a different view of it altogether. They say that if you have knowledge that a crime has been committed, you have a civic duty to report that crime, and the way you report crime is not going down to the police and filing a report. The way you report crime is to file a criminal complaint, telling the court that you have knowledge or reason to believe that this person committed a crime. And if you don't, and but Mark mentioned early on misprision of felony. U.S. 18 U.S. Code 4, right up there at the front. If you know a crime's been committed and you don't report it, you become a criminal. Texas has a similar statute that doesn't just go to felonies. If you have knowledge that a crime's been committed, you have a duty to report it. So, because you have a duty, neither can you be restricted from filing it, nor can you be held liable for filing it. And that's one thing I try to get out. People are afraid to go in and file a criminal complaint. A criminal complaint filed with the court harms no one.
Okay.
So nobody can come back and say, oh, you did this to me. No, you just report to the court, not that the person is a criminal, but that you personally have personal knowledge or reason to believe and do believe the person committed a crime. That's all you're saying. And the court, it is their duty to examine into the allegation that you make and determine if it's sufficient to give a reasonable person probable cause to believe that, in fact, the named person committed the indicated crime. When that occurs, then harm can accrue, but it accrues to the court, not to you. If you didn't do anything to them, the court has to do it based on the facts. And as long as you tell the truth in your accusation, you are absolutely untouchable.
Okay, good. Hey, I saw a DA today. I told you about, you know, the case with my son. They caught three boys in the car with some stuff, and they charged all three boys with it. Well, the other two guys paid the ticket already, and I just wanted to see how far they were going to take it, and they want to go to a jury trial with it, and I'm laughing because I wanted to go see the DA and see what he said. I held back on filing charges against the police officer and the police chief because I wanted to see what the DA says, and he was completely cocky, so I'm going to give it to him, both barrels.
Good. Excellent. Have you checked Michigan law to see what the duty of the prosecuting attorney is?
Wisconsin law.
Oh, you're my old Wisconsin. Oh, the other side of the lake.
Right.
What his duty is when he's made known that a crime has been committed, and it, like in Texas, he has a specific duty that when he's made known that a crime has been committed, to present the complaint to the grand jury.
Oh, Randy. Check this out. He said, do you have anything to say? I said, yes. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm doing here. You can read right on the police report that no, my son was not caught, did not have possession of anything. And I said, your officer perjured himself. And he said, well, I'm still pressing charges. And he literally picked up his stuff and ran out of the room.
Well, okay, look at his duty. In Texas,
I'm not exaggerating, Randy. He literally jogged out of the room.
Well, you understand that they're accustomed to coming in and twisting your arm a little bit, and you roll over and say, please don't bite my throat, I'm not biting. That's what they're used to. And you didn't roll over for him. Now he's afraid you're going to bite him back. And you should. Okay, in Texas, there's a special statute for when a complaint is made against a public official. Look in Wisconsin law and see if there's a similar statute. It'll be under duties of officers in the Criminal Procedure Code.
Duties of officers.
Yes, it tells the prosecutor what he's supposed to do when a crime's he has knowledge that a crime's been committed. And it's basic to his function. There is a special statute in Texas, but it really doesn't need to be there, because the normal statute tells him that when he's made known that a crime's been committed, he shall present the complaint to the grand jury if he's a district attorney. Or if he's a county attorney, he's to present it, prepare an information, present it to the clerk of the court along with the criminal complaint. Both of them direct him to do it, but in Texas they added a special statute to make sure, in case of public officials, that he absolutely did it. See if they have one in Wisconsin. If they do, then you go in, file the criminal complaint, get the prosecutor to refuse to take him. Now you got him. Now you go for him. You file criminal charges against him. You prepare a motion to the district court asking for a court of inquiry. In Texas, we have a special statute for that, but you don't need it. You can always ask the court to inquire into improper practices. Ask the court to convene a special investigative grand jury, because the current grand jury is contaminated by close interaction with this prosecuting attorney. So you need a fresh grand jury to investigate into the prosecuting attorney and ask the court to appoint an attorney pro tem, as opposed to a special prosecutor. Special prosecutor assists the existing prosecutor. A prosecutor pro tem takes the place of the existing prosecutor. And you need an attorney pro tem to prosecute this prosecutor. And the judge is going to refuse to do it.
Okay.
And then you appeal.
My plan of attack was to go after the chief first, and I know he's going to refuse to take the charges. And then I was going to go after the mayor. And then I wanted to see if I could get this DA, because he's so arrogant. I want to see if he'll touch the tar baby. has he already touched the tar baby since I told him that his officer committed perjury and he ignored it?
Yes. He's already stuck to it.
Okay.
Well, maybe. You just told him. So he hasn't been officially notified. Always when you have that, the way I tell them is I say, here, look at this. And I hand him a verified criminal affidavit. And look at Wisconsin law. You know, go to the criminal court and ask to see an information. An information is what a criminal complaint is supposed to look like. The prosecutor creates an information based on a complaint. Citizens create complaints, they could have errors. There's a lot of leeway in complaints.
So
okay. He creates an information that essentially is a correct complaint, corrected to match law. So you look at that information, that's exactly what it should look like. Take information off top, put complaint on it, fill it out in front of a notary, have the notary verify it, put that in his hand. Now he's been notified by verified affidavit by a sovereign citizen. Now he has legal notice.
Okay.
You can't dance around that one.
I want this guy. he was arrogant. When I started, I was just about to run down the list of crimes that were committed, and I only got one out, and I swear he jumped up and ran out the door. He grabbed
That's
his
great.
Stuff off the table and ran out the door. My son looked at me, and he's like, what just happened, Dad?
Got him on the run, that's what.
This is when it gets good. It gets better when you're going on the attack.
Oh, this is going to be fun, because, it's a $177 fine, and my son is absolutely not guilty. I've got nothing to lose. I mean, this is going to be a great learning experience for me.
It's the cheapest legal education you can get.
It's great, Mark. All right. Well, listen, we're getting a full board here, so we need to move on because we're only going to be on the air for about another 25 minutes.
Okay. Well, if you come up with something on Ray Nagin, let me know. I'll fly it down there if you can't mail it.
Oh, wonderful.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Listen tomorrow night. We'll be on for 4 hours.
Yeah. We'll be on tomorrow at 8 to midnight.
I'll have you on the air here then.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Oh, by the way, Mark, how are you listening to us tonight? Are you listening to us on FM radio or on the internet stream?
I am a media magnate. I'm broadcasting you live.
Oh, ooh, you're a mogul?
Yes, I am.
Oh, wow. You're broadcasting us, huh?
Call me Rupert.
Cool.
Well, Mr. Murdoch.
Who else would call up and complain about swearing?
Well, do you have any idea of how many listeners you have?
I really couldn't say because I'm in a valley, and I pick it up sometimes in downtown Madison. I pick it up 20 miles away in small outlying areas. It's really spotted, but I'm sure you guys have been getting a lot of calls from Wisconsin, so I must have something to do with it.
Of course.
That's what we've come to figure out. We're just on the internet, and we've got 200 streams.
Right.
But we're getting calls from all over the country.
Yeah.
And we have to be on micros that we're not aware of.
Yes.
If we can become aware of those, then we can include those to our sponsors so we can get higher level sponsoring and get this thing a little more sophisticated. And matter of fact, pretty soon here I'm going to start putting up some micros myself. We're going to get this thing out there.
If I had to guess, I'd say that 30,000 people have access to the channel.
Wow. Thanks, 30, Mark.
Yep.
That's awesome. Okay, well, thanks, Mark. We're going to move on and tune in tomorrow night.
Good night.
All right, good night. All right, we're going to go now to Jeff in Maryland. Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I just wanted to let you know what we are doing here in Maryland about the foreclosure situation.
Oh, great.
We're actually dealing with those that have already taken place and people who have been ejected from their homes. And so far in one particular jurisdiction, we have located 200 to 250 cases where it was the servicer who foreclosed and not the holder of the note.
Oh, wonderful. Do they have the pooling and service agreements and the...
We've got various reports from MERS showing that they are not the holder of the note.
Oh, wonderful. So what are you looking at doing here? Are you going to attack these individuals?
You just wait and see what we're going to do. Okay. Now, a good many of them have put in affidavits of lost, stolen, or strayed notes. So what we're going to do is we're gathering, we're contacting these people, and this is just one lender, by the way. Not a bunch of lenders, but just one lender. And we're contacting them to enroll them in our program. We are we're interviewing attorneys now that are experienced in both RICO and antitrust. Because if we have to escalate this up into federal court, we want junkyard dogs.
Yes. That's my philosophy.
Yeah.
If you're going to protect yourself, you got to feel like you're a mad dog thrown into the pit of other dogs.
Really?
Bite everything that moves.
We're going to start with a motion to vacate, and then include an affidavit of prejudice, and then we're going to toss in, just for good measure, a RICO complaint.
Let me make a suggestion.
Go ahead.
And this is what we were talking about in the Waco incident. These things can't happen without these individuals acting in concert and collusion with the judge.
We understand that.
Are you going after the judge?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wonderful.
But we're not going to start off that way.
So we're going to say that.
We're going to check him in.
Good. This is how we'll get our system back.
One of the things that's really nice about this is that, considering that we most likely will win if we don't decide to settle out of court, which is more than likely what will happen, is we'll settle out of court on this particular issue. But if we do take some cases all the way to trial, that civil RICO, when we get the judgment in our favor, now becomes a slam dunk criminal case.
Yes. That's the good part about RICO, is you get to get a civil judgment on a preponderance, and the civil judgment on the preponderance essentially gives you a slam dunk on the criminal.
Right.
So,
well, I suspect that what's probably going to happen is that these people are going to be very, very eager to settle. And considering that under RICO, the damages are, the remedy is three times the damages.
Yes, treble.
Treble damages. That's a lot of money.
And we talked to some attorneys, and I was talking to Tony Davis about this, and he was talking to a federal judge out of Oklahoma, and he said that RICO, dropping a RICO suit is like dropping an atom bomb. See, it terrifies everybody. He especially referenced the suit against the tobacco companies.
All right.
That people sued them, and they threw massive amounts of money at it. But when the states come back and dropped a RICO suit on them, now all of a sudden all of these executives are saying, hey, wait a minute, we're liable to go to prison here.
Uh-huh.
And then they started feeding on themselves.
Yep. Well, you have to keep in mind this is also going to include the attorneys because they were a party to it.
Oh, they should be bar grievances everywhere.
Oh, there's only so much that we could do at any one given point in time, and given that a lot of these situations are going to be taken on a contingency basis, we have to stay very, very pointed with the attorney that we're going to be working with.
Okay. One thing, then I would like to talk to you here soon about something that I'm doing.
Okay.
Litigation Engine.
But I did try to reach you earlier about the Ohio barn, but your phone battery is either dead or you had it turned off.
No, I was talking today to Ben Drum in Dallas, and beep, it went down, and I couldn't find my charger for about an hour or so. I finally located it, got it plugged in.
You're going to have to find somebody in addition to Daddy to be your keeper.
Yeah. I'm not his keeper.
I know you're not.
I don't even want to try. He's too big of a mess for me to deal with.
But we're putting together a litigation engine.
Yeah.
And for bar grievances and judicial conduct complaints,
mm-hmm.
those would be programmed in.
Let me invite you to consider something here, if I may.
Absolutely.
So sorry about the interruption. But in a lot of these civil cases, you will not see any corporate disclosure statement saying who owns the plaintiff or who does the plaintiff own. Okay, and that goes to judicial canon. And how that goes to judicial canon is how is a judge going to know whether or not he has a conflict of interest if all these people who are in the various lines and hierarchy of this organization is the plaintiff, if he owns stock in them or has contracts with them, and he can't determine whether or not he has conflict of interest.
Are you requesting financial disclosure by the judge?
We haven't voir dired that as the judge as yet, but we're considering that, but it would serve little purpose if there's no corporate disclosure statement saying who owns what and whom.
Well, Tony's doing that as a matter of course in discovery.
Okay, but that's the difficulty with that is that oftentimes the judge isn't necessarily going to know or realize that, you know, like if he has a savings account with a particular institution, well, that's a security. And he owns a security with that institution. That's a conflict of interest.
Yes, and that's why we go after the judge's finances. We're not saying that the judge directly knows the details of these, but we need to know all of his financial holdings, mm-hmm. so we can compare them to these corporations as we locate them in discovery and make a determination whether or not we want to move against the judge. And this will drive the judges crazy.
Well, as you said, it does go to the judicial canon.
This is wonderful.
I mean, isn't that a neat, this is something that that came to my attention about two, maybe 3 weeks ago, and I've not had any kind of a real opportunity to explore it, but an associate of mine out in New Mexico is, and he's starting to run test cases on it.
Can you get him to give me an email? I would certainly like to talk to him. Or you send me an email on that?
I will ask his permission on it.
Wonderful.
Yeah, because I have, yeah, just like with you folks, you know, we've got to protect somebody's privacy.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah. What I'm trying to do is put together an engine that automates all this little annoying stuff. And, you know, I'm sure you've had the experience where you're putting stuff together for a suit, and you sit down right at the last minute and say, okay, let's get all this stuff and make sure we've got all the pieces in place.
Uh-huh.
And it's always very time-consuming. It's always very frustrating because there's always something that you missed. Writing
right.
A litigation engine to program in those little annoying pieces that you would miss, like if you find this particular issue in this issue, a bar grievance should be created. The system will do it automatically. Boom.
Well, one of the things that I would do with my students is have them write out all the issues, all the case law, all the causes of actions, all the affirmative defenses, and in paragraphs, and then cut them out, and then build their brief.
That's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah. Arranging them in whatever sequence fits the situation.
That's exactly what we're doing.
It would not be a monumental task for them to do it.
Yeah. No. We're taking the documents apart and breaking all the issues into legal elements.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll write this all by itself so it's complete and independent of everything coming before it and after it, so it doesn't need a lead in or lead out. So
right.
That we can do a questionnaire, and if the questionnaire indicates this legal element, the system just says, go get this element and drop it in and attach the legal brief we have made designed for it and the explanation for the legal issue and how to argue it. We will have all of this put together so that...
Is your litigation engine going to include discovery?
Absolutely. As best we can. Discovery gets real complex.
Yeah, it can, but there's a book out called Guerrilla Discovery. And right now I can't find sufficient amount of information on it to tell you who wrote it. But
good. Will you call back tomorrow night?
Yes, sir.
We're running out of time.
Yeah, we only have like 10 minutes left, and we got some more calls.
Yeah, and I'd like to spend a lot more time on this.
Sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay.
This I'm going
to spend more time on. I managed to get in to not be the last person to get in.
Yeah, call early in the show.
Yeah, we got 4 hours tomorrow night.
Yes.
We can address this better.
All right. Very good. Talk to you again soon.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Call tomorrow night.
Bye.
Okay, we're now going to go to John in Austin, and then we have Paul from California. John, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Hi. I have a question I want to run by you guys, if I may.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I was the subject of a federal investigation, and I was a victim of a crime, and then I became a target within the investigation at the federal level, and they came in and wanted a DNA sample. Hello?
Yeah, we're listening.
Okay, and wanted a DNA, and this was here in Austin.
Federal prosecutors did?
FBI.
Okay.
And came in. I knew these guys. I worked with them. I was a criminal investigator with the Texas Attorney General's office. And anyway, come over to the house, say, you know, they came under a false pretense. came under the house. My wife's there. I'm there. We need a DNA sample. And by the way, we're authorized to use any and all force necessary to get it. Agent opens up his jacket to let me know he's got his pistol and his taser with him.
Shoot him.
What?
Shoot him.
Well, he had six more of his friends outside.
Yeah. Never start a fight you can't win.
Do they have a warrant?
Hey, man, they come into my house without a warrant, they're going to be dead.
Anyway, they come in. They did have a warrant. This is where this goes to my question. I've been a voluntary witness, a cooperating witness in this up to this point. I asked for the warrant. About a week later, I go down to the federal courthouse, to the clerk's office, to see if I can get a copy of the affidavit, because I'm trying to figure out what kind of probable cause.
Wait. Affidavit must be attached to the warrant.
That's right.
No, you have the warrant, and the affidavit was always filed in the clerk's office.
The affidavit. Okay, what is in the affidavit that's missing from the warrant?
Is all the probable cause and laws violated, correct?
The warrant, okay, yeah, there has to be, you have to know, be able to determine the limits and extent of the authorization of the warrant.
The warrant itself, the face of the warrant that they handed me, authorized them to get a DNA sample from me, period, okay?
Was the warrant sealed?
Yes. I went down to the clerk's office. It's sealed. I can't get a copy.
Yeah, okay. Yes, you can.
Well, I have to get a lawyer to go in and then file motions and everything. Okay. Now, let me go. I'm going to take this one step further. This is where it gets interesting. I go back a couple of months later to see if it's unsealed, and they don't have a record of it.
Okay, yeah, this is how it happens. If they seal a warrant, they remove the, when the warrant's issued, they give the warrant a cause number.
Right.
And then when it's sealed, they remove the cause number from the clerk's records.
Well, we tried to look it up under my name, under the cause number, all the different ways, and they say it is not here, it has been removed.
That's standard procedure on sealing a warrant. I went after I filed a letter of information request to all of the magistrates, federal magistrates in Pennsylvania. I demanded the cause numbers for all warrants issued by the magistrate, sealed and subsequently executed.
Right.
Because I maintained that some rogue officials, U.S. Marshals, FBI agents, and IRS agents, were going through the court record and finding missing cause numbers and assuming those cause numbers are missing because they're attached to a sealed warrant. And then they're making up warrants of their own and putting that cause number on it.
Oh, man.
They go down, search to the local police and say, hey, we have this warrant to search and seize. And if the police have any questions, which normally they'll never question the feds, even if they do, they contact the clerk of the court, and the clerk of the court will say, that cause number does not exist in my records, and normally it doesn't exist because it's a sealed warrant. And the police says, oh, okay. And then the police go out and help the agents steal everything you got, and the agents disappear.
All right, so to go and get a copy of the affidavit, which is the real meat and potatoes of what I want, okay, then I need to get an attorney probably to go in and...
Yeah, do you have a copy of the warrant?
Yes.
Take it. Who is the magistrate who issued it?
Right, that would be Judge Austin here in here in Austin.
Then file
you know who I'm you're in Texas, right? In
yes.
Central Texas?
Yeah, I'm in Austin.
You know who I'm talking about, Judge Austin?
No, I haven't messed with the federal court here in Austin yet.
Oh, you're blessed.
Well, you go in and demand it from the magistrate.
Okay.
If the magistrate doesn't produce it, then you petition the district court for writ of mandamus ordering him to produce it. That affidavit is commanded to be attached to the warrant.
Right.
The warrant on its face. If they come out to seize, like here they come to seize DNA.
Right.
The courts have said, well, we don't want this person raising an argument and fighting with our officers because he doesn't believe that the warrant is sufficient. So in order to establish that it is, the affidavit must be attached.
Well, see, in the federal, when I was working on federal task force and we would do search warrants, the affidavit showing probable cause was always filed through the clerk's office and would be sealed until the warrant was that. This was standard procedure. It varied from prosecutor to prosecutor. But as a general rule, the affidavit showing probable cause would be sealed until the warrant had been executed. That way, it kind of helps protect us from information leaking out ahead of time. And then once basically we filed the return, and the return was on file, or the subject's counsel had contacted the prosecutor, then it would be unsealed.
Well, 1526 Code of Criminal Procedure in Texas, I don't think the feds have the same statute. 1526.
Right, this is all at a federal level.
Yeah.
This is all at the federal level.
I think under the federal warrants, too, they're supposed to, either the warrant itself is supposed to allege the prerequisites for its issuance from the affidavit, or it's supposed to have the affidavit attached. Because you're supposed to be able to read the warrant when it's served on you and determine from the warrant and or its attached affidavit whether or not it's got sufficient probable cause for its issuance.
Yes,
okay.
The law says that, the case law says that the person executing the warrant can make no determination of his own as to what is to be searched or what is to be seized. It must be clearly stipulated in the warrant. And
right, and we would have attached to our warrant items to be searched and seized. And I used to do healthcare white-collar crime. And so, like, we would have all medical records, computers, blah, 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 a laundry list. As long as you're on.
Did you always have a what is it called? Privilege team?
Yes. Privilege community.
Yes.
How will you?
Oh, I'm afraid we're out of time.
We're running out of time. Yeah, we're at the end of the show. John, can you call back tomorrow night?
Yeah, sure.
And
oh,
Paul
wonderful.
And Paul from California. I'm sorry we didn't have a chance to take your call.
Oh, real quick, 2 seconds. On your rebroadcasting. So I'm off.
Yeah. Go ahead and call back tomorrow night.
Okay.
We'll answer it then.
Yeah. We'll answer your questions. All right, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Central Time. This is the Rule of Law on Rule of Law Radio. Thank you, all the callers, and thanks for joining us, Mark. And Mark, if you can, please call back in. Let us know how it went at the exit polls. We'll be back tomorrow night.
All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Rockers, original Rockers. Original Rockers.
Never gonna say goodbye. Never gonna say goodbye. Love will be a message that I must send to you. Waiting for reply. No matter how I just can't understand why so many people just like me.